Chapter 19. Men and women, dressed in elegant summer robes, mull about the drawing room, exchanging greetings and pleasantries. Most of them are couples that Draco had encountered at his parents' dinner table when he was still at Hogwarts. There are rounds after rounds of oohs and ahs over how grown-up Draco has gotten. Carol Ross, a small, portly woman, recounts a story of how Draco, 5 at the time, had disappeared on her estate, only to be found asleep under the kitchen table, having eaten 2 platefuls of tea cakes she'd prepared for her guests. Arlene Hartledge, owner of Magical Construction and Remodeling, tells him that she still remembers him when he could barely see over the table, and laughs at how adorably serious he'd been back then. Draco supposes it's better than being remembered as a sullen and anxious teenager. Smiling graciously, Draco asks her how her company is faring. The smile on Arlene's face falters and her lips thin, giving her sharp-angled face an almost gaunt appearance. "We were forced to shut down when Minister Shacklebolt came into power," she says, waving her long fingers. "We were deemed to be too closely affiliated with the Dark Lord." Draco blinks at her in surprise. "I didn't realize your company declared any kind of alliance during the war." "We didn't," she says, "but anything less than outright denouncement was considered a show of complete support. It took me 30 years to build that company and one low-level ministry official's signature to shut it down." Draco is trying to figure out how to respond when someone over his shoulder catches Arlene's eye. "Here comes Gordon," she mutters, leaning a little closer to him. "Don't ask him about his boys." Gordon's twin sons were in 7th year when Draco had entered Hogwarts. He remembers being terribly enamored with Jacob, the taller and more talkative of the two. "Why?" asks Draco, but it's too late. Gordon, rotund and watery-eyed, is already there, kissing Arlene on the cheeks and squeezing Draco's hand in both of his. "Look how tall you've gotten." He reaches up to touch the top of Draco's head. With an indulgent smile, Draco leans down to let him. Gordon pats his head with a chuckle. "Goodness gracious, you're as tall as Mr. Zabini. What are they feeding you, boys?" "Clean up," Arlene mouths as Draco straightens. "String beans," says Draco, even as his stomach collapses into itself. "Clearly," Gordon replies, the watery nature of his eyes taking on an entirely different meaning. "Look at you," the man continues, "a father's pride and mother's joy. Your parents tell me you'll be looking for our support with some matter. Ask away, anything for the children, anything." "Thank you, Gordon," says Draco, squeezing the man's shoulder in a way that he hopes conveys all his condolences. "Absolutely not," says Frank Salliver, a handsome, dark-haired man, drawing a flurry of nods from the people seated around the table. "How can you even suggest we—" he lifts his fork and waves it like a wand. "What, forgive and forget?" "Both sides have experienced loss," says Draco, for what feels like the 10th time. Blaise, who is seated beside him, doesn't even try to hide his exasperated sigh. "Both have done horrible things. Our side during the war, their side after it. But if we don't close this rift, we're going to just keep going." "I think we should put our support behind the uprising," says Carol. "If we regain control over the ministry, all these troubles will end." Draco glances at his father, who's doing his best to keep himself from rolling his eyes. "What do you think will happen if this uprising actually takes place?" asks Lucius. "Who will be spared?" "Certainly not me." "Definitely not you, Carol, what with your family's reputation." And it takes Draco a moment to remember the articles accusing Carol and her family of making a killing in supplying both sides of the war with magical artifacts and ingredients, even though none of the Rosses were marked and a direct link to Voldemort was never truly proven. "They'll come for you first." I can't believe your father is the voice of reason at this table, murmurs Blaze, leaning into Draco's side. Draco snorts into his napkin before sitting up straighter, trying to regain his composure. That's if we lose, Carol replies. Draco barks a laugh. Of course we'll lose. Merlin's beard, was there not a single moment when you thought the war wasn't a good thing? Of course there was. My neighbours, a small muggle-born family. Well, she was muggle-born, he was an outright muggle. They were killed. My little one Karen used to play with their son. Draco opens his mouth, but Carol raises her hand, stopping him. But they weren't the only ones who died, Draco. My sister was in a muggle market, and some madman showed up, shot up the entire marketplace before he fled. My parents spent months bribing every ministry official they could, and the ministry still refused to send in the DMLE. They told them that Claire was in Muggle London, and we had to rely on Muggle Please men to solve the case. So my brother took matters into his own hands. He found the man responsible for the attack and killed him. The DMLE was on our doorstep within the hour, and my brother sentenced to life in Azkaban by week's end. He died in there. So tell me, Draco, why should have I put aside financial gain to support the Ministry of Magic in their war against Voldemort? What has the Ministry ever done for me? Voldemort didn't do anything for you either. She shrugs a shoulder. He promised to cut import taxes in half. So you were okay with Voldemort as Minister of Magic because he would cut taxes? Asks Blaze, voice taking on a steely edge. What does it matter to me who's Minister of Magic? They're all useless anyway, these bureaucrats. You never worked with Fudge, Blaze, but he was as dense as a pile of bricks. Anyone sounded better than him. Voldemort was a known murderer, Blaze practically snarls. Draco touches his knee under the table, trying to calm him. Revolutions don't happen without a few heads rolling, Carol snaps. Then she seems to retreat into herself, lost in thought. But I suppose that's just an excuse. I think, that he would be horrendous. I just thought that he would be horrendous elsewhere. A few people nod around the table. 79 of my colleagues, says Markovich Dreg, a wizarding little fellow who was well known to be a paper pusher in the ministry, were killed during the ministry attack. I knew it was going to happen. I mean, I didn't know, but I knew. So many of us knew and ignored it. We told ourselves we were seeing things, blowing them out of proportion. Didn't think it would be that bad. Didn't want to seem like paranoid lunatics. I understand that you feel all torn up about it, Dreg, says Theodore Yaxley, but I, for one, refuse to prostrate myself before Shacklebolt in hope that he doesn't take my head the moment my neck is exposed. So you don't feel bad? There wasn't an order Voldemort gave that your brother didn't follow, says Draco. Do I find my brother's actions regretful? Absolutely, but my brother was his own man, and now I'm being punished for the things he did. No one will do business with my family. They think that we're all thieves and liars. My little girl couldn't wait to get married so she could change her maiden name. And you're so pure, sitting here, judging us, says Saliva, zeroing in on Draco, pointing at him with a thin finger. You and your parents opened your home to him. We may have been on the sidelines, but you let him brand you. Get off it, Saliva, says Dreg. Half of us at this table are branded, and the ones who aren't only avoided it by a hair. Some of us did more evil than others, Saliva says. And some of us, says Arlene, did more evil than most and didn't even know they were doing it. 43 muggles died because of me. The table falls silent, so she goes on. The Muggle Protection Act forbade 2 weak developments, something about swift changes in the ecosystem having adverse effects on Muggles' brains. She runs her finger over the rim of her wine glass. So when he came to me, looking for support for his cause, well, he lifted the restriction, and I started putting up a building every 2 weeks. The suicide rates in the neighborhoods I was developing skyrocketed. By the time I realized it was happening, the Dark Lord already knew. Encouraged it. My men, though, they slowed down anyway, complained of exhaustion, helped in what little ways they could, faulty spell work, collapsing walls. But it was too late. I had to keep going. He had me by the neck. Terrible as we all feel for you, Arlene. We all know you doubled your income while Voldemort was in power. I did. And then I lost my home. My place in society, my life. My entire family has dispersed. I'm here, my children are in America. I'm afraid to contact them for fear of drawing any attention to their whereabouts. My sister and her family fled to Finland, and our parents are living out the last of their days in Kent, with no way of knowing if we're even alive. She looks around the table. I think Draco and Blaze are right. This is no way to live. Whatever they did during the cleanup, we're responsible for enough evil during the war that we're going to have to show some accountability if we want to be allowed back into the world. So, Malfoy, says Yaxley, clearing his throat, what do you propose? And just like that, Draco knows he's in. After dinner, once all the guests have dispersed, Draco and Blaze retire to the drawing room. They go over the next steps of the process, what they should do, who they should approach, how they can leverage the gold, and the support they've been promised. Draco pours them tumblers of cognac, lights the fire in the hearth with a flick of the wrist, and they sit down, side by side, on the green velvet couch. Blaze toes off his shoes and curls one leg under himself, angling his body towards Draco. He's very handsome, Draco notes, the firelight accentuating Blaze's sharp features. Pansy would have loved this, says Blaze. Well, yeah, laughs Draco. She thought she was the queen of plotting. If only her plots were as good in the execution, says Blaze, as they were in their conception. You're one to talk, Draco snorts. There wasn't a single plot of hers you could resist involving yourself in. Better than involving myself in yours, Blaze grins. Hey, says Draco, leaning forward to pinch Blaze's arm. They talk and laugh and reminisce, and Draco can feel himself relaxing in a way that he hasn't since they'd sat together this way in the Slytherin common room. Blaze tells him about his time in Paris, about magical mind healing, and the more curious cases that came through his office. How did you get into mind healing anyway? Asks Draco, taking a sip of his cognac. I was seeing this young man, says Blaze. He had a mental break, nearly killed himself. Merlin Blaze, I'm so sorry. No, it's fine, he's all right now, but yeah, he was addicted to magic. I didn't even know that was possible at the time. He had developed these charms that would be continuously active so that he didn't need to cast a spell in order to be casting. Oh, fuck. Yeah. When we met, he had two going at once. The day he tried to kill himself, he'd activated a seventh. He overdrew. Became a squib. Blaze gets up, walks over to the fire, places his glass onto the mantel. I should have seen the signs, there were so many. He was anxious, erratic, quick to anger, crying one minute, laughing the next. At the time, I thought it made him eccentric. Draco gets up, goes to stand beside Blaze, who turns from the fire to face him. Draco, Blaze mutters, reaching over to touch the back of Draco's hand, I think you... The drawing room door opens. Draco glances towards it, expecting his mother, but it's not. Harry is standing there. He's so handsome in the candlelight that it takes Draco a moment to realize that his face is pale, eyes darting between Draco and Blaze. Potter, says Blaze, mystified. Oh, God, breathes Harry. He licks his lips, finally meeting Draco's eyes, says, You left England. Ron just got a warrant for your arrest. I thought you should know. Then he turns on his heel and flees. The door snicks shut behind him. Draco stares at it stupidly for a moment. Draco, was that Potter? But Draco is already striding across the drawing room, wrenching the door open and chasing after him.